A glacier in the Italian Alps released its secret in 1991, a man who had been frozen for over five millennia. Scientists examining Otzi's possessions discovered something astonishing. His copper axe contained metal from Tuscany, 500 miles away. His clothing incorporated materials from dozens of different communities. This wasn't just a wanderer. This was evidence of something fundamental about human nature. We've always been traders, cooperators, boundary crossers. Long before smartphones connected us globally, we were already wired to exchange, to collaborate, to reach beyond our immediate circle. Watch children on a playground long enough, and you'll witness something remarkable. They spontaneously develop trading systems. Rice cakes become currency. Toys get bartered. This isn't learned behavior. It's who we are. Archaeological sites confirm this instinct stretches back 300,000 years, when obsidian tools found in Kenya originated nearly 90 kilometers from where they were discovered. Someone carried that volcanic glass across vast distances, traded it, used it, left it behind. What made humans different wasn't just intelligence or language, though we had both. It was the combination: smart enough to learn, articulate enough to share what we learned, and cooperative enough to want to share it in the first place. This created something unprecedented: cultural evolution. While genetic evolution requires beneficial mutations to spread slowly through reproduction over countless generations, cultural evolution happens instantly. Someone invents a better fishing technique, and by sunset, the entire village knows it. This is why humans leaped ahead while other species crawled. When humans encountered Neanderthals in Europe 50,000 years ago, the outcome seemed unlikely. Neanderthals were stronger, had larger brains, and had survived harsh climates for hundreds of thousands of years. Yet within millennia, they vanished. The difference? Neanderthals lived in isolated groups with no trade networks. Humans had specialists, hunters, gatherers, toolmakers, creating cascading advantages: better resource use, improved technology, safer child rearing, and constant innovation through knowledge exchange. Trade wasn't just about getting stuff, it was about getting ideas. Surprisingly, market-integrated societies developed stronger cooperation. Research across 15 communities showed market integration correlates directly with generosity. The more people depend on markets, the more willing they become to make generous offers and punish unfairness, even at personal cost. Free immigration could potentially double world GDP. A worker's productivity depends enormously on location. The same person doing identical work produces vastly different value depending on access to complementary workers, infrastructure, and institutions. Removing barriers to labor mobility could increase global GDP by 60 to 150% compared to free trade's few percentage points. All cultures are products of exchange. Your business suit? Developed from Eastern European and Muslim models. Your necktie? Croatian mercenaries. Even classic white Europeans are genetic mixtures from dark-skinned hunter-gatherers, Anatolian farmers, and Yamnaya pastoralists. Every hyperpower in history, Persians, Macedonians, Romans, Tang Chinese, Mongols, Ottomans, Dutch, British, Americans, achieved dominance through diversity and tolerance, not racial purity. The Persian Empire ruled nearly a third of the world's population by preserving local religions while harnessing Phoenician explorers, Greek scientists, Egyptian doctors, and Babylonian astronomers. Rome perfected this approach. As Montesquieu observed, Romans became masters of the world because they always gave up their own practices as soon as they found better ones. They made Roman a cultural identity rather than an ethnicity. Emperor Claudius argued that cities like Sparta declined precisely because they always considered the conquered as foreigners. Spain's decline illustrates the cost of closing doors. After embracing purity of blood, the Spanish Inquisition expelled 250,000 Moriscos by 1609, devastating the Eastern agricultural economy. Spain defaulted 9 times during the 16th to 17th centuries. Cities became innovation engines by bringing strangers together. progress happens when ideas have sex, not from new ingredients, but from new combinations. Immigrants contribute disproportionately. They're 47% of science and engineering doctorates, while being just 12% of the American workforce, founded 40% of Fortune 500 companies, and are three times more likely to file patents or win Nobel Prizes. Today's immigration skeptics praise previous waves while claiming current newcomers won't assimilate. Exactly what was said about Irish immigrants in the 1850s, Chinese in the 1870s-80s, and Eastern European Jews in the 1920s. Science began with the criticism of myths. While humans always created supernatural explanations, it took free minds to seek natural causes. This revolution emerged in 6th century BC Greece, where thinkers like Thales explained the world through natural laws rather than gods. Three conditions enabled this: independent city-states offering intellectual freedom, seafaring merchants exchanging ideas, and the absence of a controlling priestly caste. But science doesn't follow a simple trajectory. It can halt or reverse. After the Greek Enlightenment, European progress stagnated for over a millennium as Christianity established a monopoly on thought. Christian zealots destroyed classical knowledge, burning libraries and murdering scholars. Mathematician Hypatia was brutally murdered in 415 AD, stripped naked and flayed with pottery shards. Emperor Justinian forced mass baptisms and closed Plato's Academy after 900 years. While Europe languished in darkness, the Islamic world became the true heir of classical civilization. Beginning in the 8th century, Muslim scholars made revolutionary advances in astronomy, mathematics, and medicine. Al-Khwarizmi invented modern algebra, Omar Khayyam measured the year with remarkable precision, and Al-Idrisi created the most accurate world map of his time. By 1700, Europe remained less advanced than Asia in incomes, productivity, and literacy. However, Europe had become more open, a difference that would change world history. Political fragmentation proved crucial. With approximately 500 independent political units in 16th century Europe, when persecution occurred in one region, innovation could flourish elsewhere. The Industrial Revolution could easily have begun in China under the Song Dynasty, 960-1279. While Europe stagnated, China had invented the compass, movable type printing, and gunpowder. Song China's iron output nearly matched Europe's 1700 production, and their textile machines could have sparked industrialization 400 years earlier. But the Ming Dynasty, 1368, reversed this progress. Blaming Song's openness for foreign conquest, new rulers dismantled checks on power, built walls, banned private overseas trade, prohibited foreign languages, and abandoned religious freedom. China's reversal during the Age of Discovery reveals how Europe surged ahead. Between 1405-1433, Ming emperors sent seven massive voyages under Zhang He, 250 vessels carrying nearly 30,000 men to South Asia, Arabia, and East Africa. Zhang's flagship measured approximately 135 meters, nearly seven times larger than Columbus's Santa Maria. Yet China's maritime adventure ended with a single imperial decision in 1433. 3 years later, building seagoing ships became illegal. The world's greatest fleet rotted or burned, and voyage records were destroyed. European rulers weren't more enlightened. Austria-Hungary's Emperor Francis I declared in 1821 that anyone with new ideas should leave. The crucial difference was their inability to suppress innovation effectively. England's Glorious Revolution of 1688 delivered the final blow against royal absolutism. William and Mary could only take the throne after promising to uphold a Bill of Rights and respect Parliament's authority. Britain became a constitutional monarchy with genuine rule of law, judges appointed for life, legal decisions free from royal interference, and courts where even commoners could win against lords. This created the world's first inclusive political institutions, where power was shared among a broad coalition, preventing any single party from undermining pluralism. Our tribal instincts emerge with minimal provocation. In the Robber's Cave experiment, 22 similar boys divided into groups quickly developed distinct identities and fierce rivalries, descending into conflict within 2 weeks. We're designed for cooperation, but primarily within our own groups. Henry Tajfel's experiments revealed humans display in-group loyalty based on trivial differences. Even randomly formed groups favored their own and sought to maximize differences, even at personal cost. This Vladimir's choice mentality, preferring to lose one eye if your neighbor loses both, shows how tribal psychology evolved when beating rivals mattered more than gradual progress. Yet our tribal tendencies are fluid. During the Rwandan genocide, a Hutu nun protected Tutsi nuns while condemning other Tutsis, showing how we shift between identity maps. Zero-sum thinking, believing one side wins only if another loses, shapes how we view outsiders. Studies show white students willing to sacrifice millions just to prevent minority groups from getting more. In personal exchanges, we seek win-win outcomes, but as group members, we'll harm ourselves to hurt out-groups. This stems from our evolutionary past. For 99.9% of human existence, resources were limited, and someone's gain meant another's loss. Paradoxically, it's because of our tribalism that we need openness. Without contact with outsiders, they remain mysterious threats. When threatened, humans instinctively abandon openness for protection. Even minor insecurity triggers this response. Experiments show that not washing hands during flu season increases negative attitudes toward outgroups. Students who imagined being physically invulnerable became as open to social change as liberals. Authoritarianism isn't a stable personality trait, but a predisposition, held by roughly a third of Western populations, to prefer oneness over diversity, remaining dormant until threats trigger explosive intolerance. Many assume nativism rises from economic hardship, but evidence is elusive. Trump won in 2016 during economic recovery. Only 5% of Brexit supporters cited inequality as their primary concern. Disorientation and uncertainty breed nativist revolts. Difficulties suggest we've strayed from tradition, weakened by decadence and foreign influences. Karl Popper observed that civilization hasn't recovered from the transition from tribal, enclosed society to the open society that unleashes human critical powers, a shock enabling reactionary movements attempting to return to tribalism. Studies show we can override automatic bigotry and control disgust reactions, confirming our dual nature. Insecurity triggers tribalism, but self-esteem promotes tolerance. For openness to survive, its support must be broad-based through wage insurance, relocation assistance, and welfare systems that don't punish work. The simplest political action is refusing to support authoritarians who stoke fear. The new world became 3,000% richer by replacing divine right with individual rights, a revolution beginning in northwestern Europe where fragmentation paradoxically enabled innovation. We stand at a crossroads, recognize that our greatest achievements came from crossing boundaries, or retreat into the illusion that walls protect us from change.